Welcome to VOA Asia Weekend. Over the next 60 minutes, you'll hear some of the top stories and features of the past week from our daily VOA Asia program. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Here's my colleague, Ira Melman.
With Election Day less than a month away, many Americans have voted early or voted by mail. Many more are expected to do so between now and November 3rd. Former Vice President and Democratic candidate Joe Biden has been campaigning in the swing state of Florida, while President Donald Trump, who is recovering from COVID-19, has vowed to be back on the campaign trail soon. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more.
President Donald Trump is back in the White House recovering from COVID-19, saying on social media he is looking forward to a scheduled October 15th debate with Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden in Miami. In a separate recorded video posted on Twitter, Trump had the following message about the illness that put him in the hospital.
Don't let it dominate. Don't let it take over your lives. Don't let that happen. We're the greatest country in the world. We're going back. We're going back to work. We're going to be out front. As your leader, I had to do that. I knew there's danger to it, but I had to do it. I stood out front. I led.
But Trump's handling of his illness and approach to the pandemic is being criticized by Joe Biden, who spoke during an NBC News town hall Monday night.
These masks, they matter. It matters. It saves lives. It prevents the spread of the disease. Social distancing. Instead of talking about what the only thing I heard was one of the tweets saying that, you know, don't be so concerned about all this, essentially. There's a lot to be concerned about. 210,000 people have died.
Biden has been campaigning in the battleground state of Florida, a critical state in the presidential contest.
As you all know, and quite frankly, if we win Florida, you've won.
While Biden has been leading Trump in national polls, a new poll this week shows Trump is tied with Biden in Florida, a state Trump won in 2016. Voters 65 years and older are a key demographic in the U.S. because they are the most committed, says political analyst Rayfield Sonnenschein.
What seems to be happening under the surface is that Biden's small lead among older voters, an absolute bedrock for Republicans, is increasing.
Wednesday's vice presidential debate in Salt Lake City is the next major event on the campaign agenda. It is now even more relevant following Trump's illness.
It reminds everybody that there's a 74-year-old running against a 77-year-old for president, and two considerably younger people, one the vice president, the other running for vice president, who could easily be the next candidates on the ticket.
The debate styles of Vice President Mike Pence and Vice Presidential candidate Kamala Harris are likely to be different. Harris is a former prosecutor, Pence a former governor and radio talk show host. As head of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, Pence will likely be defending the administration's response to COVID-19. The outcome of the presidential race, says political analysts, will ultimately be a referendum on President Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
India is racing to build a network of roads to its disputed border with China as a military standoff between the two countries that began in May drags into winter. These roads will connect to military bases in border areas and help swiftly deploy troops and equipment to Ladakh in the Himalayan mountains. But as Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi, India's rapid infrastructure development has fueled more friction with China.
The nearly 9-kilometer-long tunnel, dug beneath the Himalayas at more than 3,000 meters, will bypass a snowbound mountain pass in winter and cut the journey by 46 kilometers to Ladakh, where Indian and Chinese forces are confronting each other. Straddling the India-China border, the cold desert of Ladakh in northern India has emerged as a flashpoint while both countries spar over their disputed frontier. Inaugurating the Atal Tunnel, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said the tunnel will help troops.
Taking care of the needs of those who protect our country is one of the main priorities of this government.
The world's longest high-altitude tunnel will enable quicker mobilization of troops and equipment to the Chinese border. It took 10 long years to complete. But India is now blasting mountainsides as it races to expedite construction of more roads amid its worst military standoff with Beijing in decades. These will give crucial all-year-round access to Ladakh, where supplies have to be airlifted in winter months when key roads get buried under heavy snow. India's rapid construction in the Himalayas is one of the reasons fueling tensions with Beijing.
China does not recognize the so-called Central Territory of Ladakh, illegally established by India. We also oppose the construction of infrastructure for the purpose of military control in the disputed border areas.
But India is pressing ahead. The government has doubled spending on border infrastructure as it seeks to close the gap with China's superior network of roads and helipads on its side.
The Sino-Indian military balance itself has always been tilting by and large towards in favor of China. And if we have to be able to tilt that balance in favor of India, one of the parameters is to get our infrastructure right. Otherwise, we won't be able to get our forces and the infrastructure and the equipments onto the border for a quick reaction.
The standoff with China that began this summer has underlined India's vulnerabilities. With no agreement yet on disengaging forces, India has been rushing equipment and artillery ahead of winter to Ladakh.
I don't think India is left with a lot of different choices in that sense. So we have been strengthening our winter deployment in terms of food, ammunition, and all kinds of things to the border areas. So we are looking at a longer-term engagement.
While it will take time to complete some of these roads, India hopes they will dramatically improve its ability to protect a disputed border that has turned volatile. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea Wednesday proposed allowing abortion up until the 14th week of pregnancy, all part of a new law designed to comply with a landmark ruling by the Constitutional Court that struck down a decades-long ban. All of the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia.
With many of the top stories from the past week, we continue now with VOA Asia Weekend.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo denounced China's exploitation, corruption, and coercion Tuesday as he participated in a high-level forum of Asian leaders that Washington hopes will counter Beijing's growing influence. VOA's Bill Gallo has details from Seoul.
Perhaps it's no big surprise that the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo slammed China during his one-day visit to Japan on Tuesday. But more important was the setting, the latest meeting of a regional group of Asian countries known as the Quad. Composed of the U.S., India, Australia, and Japan, the Quad isn't quite an alliance. It's more of a series of defense talks. But in recent months, the Trump administration has revitalized the Quad as part of its efforts to more forcefully counter China. In his comments Tuesday, Pompeo took direct aim at the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP.
As partners in this Quad, it is more critical now than ever that we collaborate to protect our people and partners from the CCP's exploitation, corruption, and coercion.
Even by the standards of the Trump administration, that's unusually blunt language. And it's much bolder than the language other Quad members use to describe the group. Japan, Australia, and India all have crucial economic ties with China and frequently downplay the notion the Quad is meant to contain Beijing. Instead, they focus on its positive aspects, such as protecting the rules-based global order. But their role in the Quad has begun to change amid the coronavirus pandemic, which originated in China Many of China's neighbors say it wasn't forthcoming enough about the virus. They're also concerned about China's increasing aggressiveness. For instance, on China's border with India, recent clashes killed at least 20 Indian soldiers. That's prompting soul-searching in India, which has famously refused to choose sides between major powers. Australia, too, is embroiled in a major dispute with China. After it called for an independent investigation into the origins of the coronavirus, China hit back with economic measures. There have also been allegations of increased Chinese domestic interference in Australia, says analyst Andrew O'Neill.
From Australia's perspective, I think there's more appetite among policymakers in Australia to push back against China, partly because, largely I should say, I think because of the perception that the Chinese have become more aggressive in targeting Australia through espionage.
But although U.S. officials say they want to expand the scope and membership of the Quad, analysts don't expect a binding NATO-like military alliance anytime soon. That's because the complex web of competing economic interests and rivalries in Asia makes it difficult for many to choose between the U.S. and China. Even some U.S. allies say the choice doesn't need to be made at all. Asked earlier this month about the idea of joining an expanded Quad, South Korea's foreign minister said she doesn't think it's a good idea. And keep in mind, that's a statement coming from a country that hosts nearly 30,000 U.S. troops. It's a sign that while China's neighbors are getting more frustrated, for now, there may be a limit to how far they'll push back. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
VOA Asia Weekend continues. Here's Ira Melman.
Even though businesses are reopening around the world, the pandemic is still a reality. Many offices are taking people's temperature before they're allowed inside. In some industries, handheld thermometers may not be efficient enough. Thermal imaging systems allow temperatures to be taken without anyone needing to be physically close to the person being evaluated. The demand for these types of devices is skyrocketing globally. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more.
In this COVID era, many businesses, such as this salon, require guests to first pass a temperature test with something like this before entering.
97.1.
Temperature screening is something that we should do in perpetuity, but we can only do it with automation.
Many businesses that expect heavy foot traffic are looking for COVID deterrent devices that can screen temperatures quicker to get more people through the door efficiently. That's where thermal imaging systems come in, and everyone seems to want one.
Schools, theme parks, sports stadiums.
Although temperature-taking technology does not diagnose disease, and not everyone with COVID-19 has a fever, global demand is skyrocketing.
We were originally shipping, like I said, 10 a month, and we're up to about 100 a day.
Many companies, including Thermal Technics, have developed infrared cameras that read body heat.
An infrared camera is about 110,000 of those point-and-shoot cameras. They're not shining a laser, they are waiting for the heat to hit them.
FLIR says its temperature screening devices, including a camera, have become more efficient through the years.
Now you're seeing more machine learning and artificial intelligence to help automate pieces of that screening process, which allows for faster throughput and consistent accuracy.
Instead of a camera, ThermalPass uses infrared sensors to read your body temperature.
There's no risk of it not measuring at all points in my body.
The company Cognitz offers an infrared and an optical sensor, along with a camera that not only screens body temperatures, but also detects whether someone is wearing a mask or keeping social distance.
So it becomes a completely automated platform.
While temperature-taking devices can be a deterrent to disease, health officials suggest more testing to diagnose COVID-19. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. Travel restrictions are still in effect due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but customers of this cafe in Thailand are given a chance to pretend they're in the sky. Plain Cafe, located in the coastal city of Pattaya, is using a retired commercial airplane to allow customers to sit down in first-class styling seating while enjoying their coffee. The passengers are also able to take photographs by the overhead lockers and tour the cockpit. The experience is really starting to take off with customers who are itching to travel once again. Another cafe at the headquarters of the national carrier Thai Airways in Bangkok is serving airplane-style food such as spaghetti carbonara and Thai-style beef served on plastic trays by cabin crew. Intrawat Sinapachet is a customer there.
Normally, I'm a person who travels very often, and when we're forced to stay at home and when we cannot travel, it's kind of depressing. So when we have a hint of an experience of dining airline food, it's quite relaxing. It relieves what's missing.
While some customers see the cafes as a fun novelty, others see it as a genuine escape from travel bans the country has instated. At 0%, a trendy cocktail bar in Tokyo, all the drinks served are non-alcoholic. However, the bar is still somewhat of an anomaly in Japan, where drinking is popular and considered an important part of business culture. Mayumi Yamamoto, who started 0%, said she was inspired to offer better non-alcoholic drinks by her own experience as a teetotaler. Alongside alcohol-free cocktails, the bar also serves vegan-friendly food. Hideto Fujino, founder of Geekonomist Group, explains why bars such as 0% are fighting the stigma of the drinking culture in Japan's business scene.
The scenarios that are often talked about are things like a boss only takes out colleagues who can drink. Only those who can drink go out, and later they tell you, we didn't invite you because you don't drink. This really hurts.
0% is not exclusive to non-drinkers only. The cocktails have been enjoyed by customers who also drink alcohol but prefer to enjoy their drink over time and in a unique atmosphere. Yuto Takahashi says he enjoys the experience there.
Usually, I drink a lot of alcohol, but here I enjoy drinks more slowly. It's like I'm appreciating the atmosphere more. I like it very much.
Similar non-alcoholic bars in Japan are starting to appear more in the country's nightlife scene. The locations are being shared on Facebook groups. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
A new horror film, Antebellum, by Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz, is the latest of several black horror films addressing race relations in the United States. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
In Antebellum, Veronica Henley, played by Janelle Monáe, is a self-assured academic and best-selling author who travels across America speaking about women's rights and racial inequality in the United States.
They're stuck in the past. We are the future.
A loving mother in an upper-class household, she feels secure in her world until all of a sudden she doesn't. Veronica gets kidnapped and transported to a Louisiana plantation recreated as a replica of one from the 1800s. There, along with a large number of other African Americans who have been abducted, she suffers atrocities. She's given a new name, and she's forbidden to speak. Antebellum filmmaker Gerard Bush tells VOA that this horror story came to him in an actual nightmare.
And it felt like this woman was screaming across dimensions for help. That this needed to be told, that I needed to get the truth out. That is the only way I can describe it.
Film critic Tim Gordon acknowledges the power that slavery evokes in Antebellum and as a theme in the black horror film genre.
I thought 12 Years a Slave, which I think is probably the platinum level of this genre, which tells this story, kind of did an amazing job.
But Gordon says black horror should focus more on the African-American experience in a modern setting.
Because I don't really think you got to go far to find the horror in the culture. You just have to be very attentive and be able to articulate it to audiences. Whether it's just the little slice that there's a scene in Antebellum where they go to a restaurant and there's three of them and they try to seat them by the kitchen next to the dirty dishes.
Antebellum filmmaker Christopher Rance tells VOA that while his film focuses on slavery, its modern setting gives it a compelling twist. He says Jordan Peele's 2017 horror blockbuster, Get Out, where black people are held captive for medical experiments by white supremacists in today's America, set the stage for Antebellum.
I'm not sure if the reception would have been the same if Get Out had not happened and was not so successful.
Tim Gordon says Hollywood's embrace of black horror has helped it expand into streaming series, such as the Emmy-winning Watchmen, a fictional superhero drama based on a graphic novel where in an alternate universe, a female vigilante cop takes on white supremacists. And Lovecraft Country, a new HBO TV series that blends superhero, sci-fi, and horror genres set in the Jim Crow era.
Anything that Jordan Peele is producing and doing in Lovecraft Country, to me, are the epitomes of what this genre can be. And in both cases, they use just simple race in America and look at it and find the horrific elements to that.
Even so, film critic James Berardinelli says the topic of slavery remains central to the black film genre.
One of the most traumatic experiences for people of color in this country is slavery and its aftermath.
Ultimately, says Berardinelli, like the Holocaust, slavery provides an inexhaustible supply of stories to be told on film. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Now on VOA Asia. After 3,000 years, Tasmanian devils finally made their return to the wild in mainland Australia on September 10th, with the help of actor Chris Hemsworth, marking what's being called a monumental moment in rebuilding Australia's ecosystem. Libby Hogan reports.
The small black marsupials called Tasmanian devils are making a comeback to mainland Australia after a 3,000-year absence. It's believed dingoes wiped the devils out, whilst a contagious facial cancer reduced the devil population on the island state of Tasmania by up to 90%. But last month, they were brought back to a sanctuary in the state of New South Wales, thanks to intrepid conservationists and some superheroic help from actor Chris Hemsworth, better known as the hammer-swinging Thor.
We've laid some traps to catch the devils, and then we're going to release them out into the wild.
Correct.
Yeah.
They've had an incredible journey from Tasmania to make sure they're not disease-free before they turn up here.
Yep.
We've bred nearly 400 joeys, and we're at the point now that we're able to harvest some to return to wild and start and rebuild our ecosystems here.
That's Tim Faulkner, who runs the conservation group Aussie Arc.
Today marks the first time in 3,000 years or thereabouts that the Tasmanian devil has roamed mainland forests. And as an apex predator, it's critically important.
Now, 11 have been set loose in the sanctuary, with plans to release 20 more next year. Australia has the worst mammal extinction rate in the world, but Aussie Arc says bringing devils back to the mainland will help to rebalance the forest ecology, damaged by the introduction of invasive predators.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan reporting.
With many of the top stories from the past week, we continue now with VOA Asia Weekend. President Donald Trump warned he would not go along with an election result based on mail-in ballots he alleges are fraudulent. To prevent the spread of the deadly coronavirus, some states have expanded voting by mail, and polling indicates significantly more Democrats than Republicans are relying on this method to cast their ballots. In addition to the likely possibility Trump will challenge the election results in court if he loses, VOA's Brian Patton reports there are growing concerns his campaign will also try to persuade the Electoral College to overturn the popular vote in states where Democratic candidate Joe Biden is deemed the winner.
At the end of Tuesday's presidential debate, the two major political party candidates were asked if they would refrain from declaring victory until the election results were independently certified. Democratic candidate Joe Biden agreed.
Once the winner is declared after all the ballots are counted, all the votes are counted, that'll be the end of it. That'll be the end of it. And if it's me, in fact, fine. If it's not me, I'll support the outcome.
But President Trump equivocated and repeated unsubstantiated charges of massive fraud from mail-in votes that could undermine the election.
I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that.
However, Trump's own FBI director, Christopher Wray, has said there is no evidence of widespread mail-in voter fraud this year. Trailing in the polls, Trump has indicated his campaign will mount legal challenges to contest mail-in ballots if he does not win, challenges that could end up being decided by the Supreme Court. Meantime, the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is being pushed through the Senate by the president and his party. There is also reporting that Trump, citing voter fraud, may ask Republican-led state governments to override the popular vote in the Electoral College if Biden wins. The Trump campaign has denied these reports. In the Electoral College, established over 200 years ago, state legislatures use the outcome of the popular vote to select electors from the victorious party who then cast the official ballots on behalf of the population of their respective states. Overriding the popular vote, analysts say, could greatly undermine public confidence in democracy itself.
And that you could see then enrage many of its citizens who had voted and anticipated that their votes would count.
The Electoral College has become increasingly controversial after declaring George W. Bush the winner of the 2000 presidential election, and then again in 2016, awarding Donald Trump the presidency, even though both lost the national popular vote. While many Democrats now advocate for abolishing the Electoral College, Republicans defend this indirect voting system because it allocates proportionally more electors to rural states.
So that means candidates have to try to appeal to a much broader, wider segment of the American populace rather than just going to the big cities and campaigning there.
This potential new Electoral College controversy over mail-in voting, analysts say, could end up producing no clear winner. In that case, the House of Representatives would be called upon to choose the next president. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
We're glad to have you with us for VOA Asia Weekend. As the Census 2020 deadline in the United States approaches, a federal judge has ordered the U.S. Census Bureau to halt plans to wind down its in-person operations for the time being. The census, which is conducted in the United States every 10 years, helps determine how hundreds of billions of dollars in federal funding is distributed and how many congressional seats each state gets in a process known as apportionment. Maria Prue has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
This is how New Yorkers are encouraged to take part in the National Census 2020.
Right now, we're making sure we're reaching out to the community, that they have all the information in multiple languages to fill out the census, so we can make sure we get everyone counted. We have very low, low numbers in some of these neighborhoods, especially with people that speak English as a second language.
As of September 13th, the Census Bureau has reached over 90% of U.S. households, but less than 70% of Americans have filled out their census forms. The census questionnaire can be filled out online, by mail, over the phone, or during a follow-up visit by a Bureau representative. But because of the coronavirus pandemic, the Bureau was forced to suspend its field operations in March and April.
I didn't participate.
Why not?
I didn't have no way to call.
To account for the pandemic, the deadline for finishing the headcount was postponed from July 31st to October 31st. The agency later changed that date to September 30th. Shortly after, a federal judge ordered the Bureau to stop observing that September 30th deadline after a number of cities, counties, and civil rights groups complained the earlier deadline would produce an inaccurate count, especially of minority communities.
It is power and it is money for your community. If you don't fill out the census, then you don't get your fair share of $1.5 trillion yearly for housing, for food, for schools, for transportation. It's representation. The numbers are based for your representation. So it's your representation in Congress all the way to the school board.
The once-a-decade national census helps determine how $1.5 trillion in federal funding is distributed and how many congressional seats each state gets in a process known as apportionment. The more populous states like California and New York get a lot more representatives than rural states like Wyoming and Vermont. The census seems fairly straightforward, but it's not without controversy. The Constitution mandates that the census count everyone in the U.S., which would include non-citizens. This doesn't sit well with many who think only citizens should be counted. According to Pew Research, if unauthorized immigrants were excluded from the apportionment count, California, Florida, and Texas would each end up with one less congressional seat. Census workers and local politicians say being counted is important because it means more federal money for individual communities.
So regardless, if you're a citizen or if you're undocumented, if you are working at a restaurant in a neighborhood or you're living in that neighborhood, we need to know. And we need to know because we need to know how many people need the resources.
The 2020 census questionnaire takes about 10 minutes to complete and includes basic questions about oneself and other household members. It is one of the simple ways that citizens can ensure the government is working for them. For Maria Prus in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
We continue with VOA Asia Weekend. The Philippines has less than 1% of reported coronavirus cases, with just over 319,000 currently, according to data from the Johns Hopkins University. Social distancing guidelines, however, remain in effect in the country. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports on a religious celebration there that went mobile amid the pandemic.
Sunday in Manila, drivers lined up to take part in the annual observance of World Animal Day. A Catholic priest wearing a mask blessed pets in the capital city as the animals and their owners stayed in their vehicles.
It's very important for us then to have our pet blessed because we feel like our pet talaga is really part of our family. And of course, we really want the best for his health too. And so yun, that's why we decided to join the pet blessing for today.
The priest sprinkled holy water on pets in this drive-through religious ceremony. It was all part of a celebration dating back almost a century with a stated goal to improve animal welfare around the world. Fears of coronavirus contagion, however, changed the ceremony's blueprint. Event organizer, Richie Pasquale.
But this time around, as mentioned, we have to adapt to the new normal. And the pandemic should never stop us from paying tribute to the furry animals that we have.
Animal activist Heinrich Zimmermann organized the first World Animal Day held in Berlin in 1925. In 1929, the official date changed to October 4th, a day Catholics celebrate the feast of St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia Weekend, it's another devastating year of wildfires in the American West. More than 1.5 million hectares have burned in California so far, shattering the previous record. As wildfires continue to worsen under the influence of climate change, one project offers hope on how to begin to confront a problem of enormous proportions. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
In 2014, California's King Fire blackened 400 square kilometers of forest. Massive erosion followed. One of Placer County's two reservoirs filled with sediment and had to be dredged, says County Water Chief Andy Fecko.
Every time we do that, it's a $5 to $7 million cost that you incur, and you're out of business during the whole time when you're trying to clear those facilities out. And so we incurred those costs several years in a row.
And he worried about the county's other reservoir, French Meadows, just a few kilometers away.
So it was one of these watersheds that was very much under threat of a high-intensity wildfire.
These devastating wildfires are on the rise in the West, experts say, as climate change dries out the forests. And a century of misguided management has left them overgrown and extra flammable. Across the West, the unintended consequences threaten reservoirs and their drinking water and hydropower. Thinning out the forest lowers the fire risk. The forest around the French Meadows Reservoir belongs to the U.S. Forest Service. But the agency has millions of hectares across the West that need thinning, says District Ranger Michael Woodbridge.
We're always doing as much as we can with the capacity we have, but French Meadows is kind of above and beyond what that capacity would have been.
So an unusual partnership formed. The Water Agency, the Nature Conservancy, state and local governments, and others all pitched in to do the planning, raise the money, and get the work done.
And we said, fantastic, if you guys can do that with us, then we can get this work done in this area.
The partners say they're going faster and doing more than any group could have done on its own. But it will still take years. With millions of hectares across the West at risk of fire and climate change turning up the heat, Water Agency Manager Fecko says Placer County's reservoirs are a cautionary tale.
I want them to learn from our experience and start taking really aggressive steps in managing their own watersheds so they don't end up in the same boat that we're in currently.
Steve Barragona, VOA News.
With tens of thousands of new coronavirus cases daily in the United States, states are launching digital apps that alert a person if they've been exposed to someone who tested positive for the virus. Virginia recently rolled out a COVID exposure app that became instantly popular with residents. Health officials are trying to determine whether such apps will work to help slow virus transmission. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
We've said all along that our primary ways of fighting this virus include testing and contact tracing.
In August, the governor of Virginia delivered some promising news in the fight to contain COVID-19.
Virginia is proud to launch a new digital app called COVIDWISE.
Virginia is the first state in the U.S. to launch an exposure notification smartphone app in partnership with Apple and Google. With close to 500,000 downloads so far, more than 11% of the state's population, health officials here say the COVIDWISE app is a hit. But it's too soon to know how well the app will work to meet its chief goal, slowing the virus's spread in the state.
COVIDWISE protects your privacy.
Part of the app's appeal is that it's voluntary and anonymous, protecting people's privacy, says Jeff Stover, who oversees the project at the Virginia Department of Health.
COVIDWISE is a means of getting information out to people anonymously that they may have been exposed without the risk of, you know, identifying who the individuals were who actually were positive.
There's going to be a lot of factors that interact that will determine, you know, how many people in a community need to be using the app for it to actually be identifying cases that might not have otherwise been identified. And that's the goal.
If a user tests positive for the virus, they can report that result on their COVIDWISE app. Other users will be notified only if the two devices have been within 1.83 meters of each other for at least 15 minutes over the last 14 days. John Benner is one of the many Virginians who has downloaded the app.
When you have an epidemic going through a community or in
this case, the country and the world, the more information you can get, the better. And this just seemed to be a logical use of technology.
Many Virginians agree and have already downloaded the app out of a sense of duty.
This was billed as something you can trust, and I accept it.
But not everyone is so trusting.
The reason I haven't is mostly because privacy concerns.
Jeff Stover says he and his team are working hard to address those concerns.
Privacy and confidentiality is something that we knew we would be confronting from day one. So we have a marketing and PR firm that we hired locally. We're doing our best to reach out to those communities.
While the app is not a silver bullet, Stover says it's one more tool to help contain the virus.
For all the people who are downloading this app, you know, we are averting more infections. We're averting more deaths. We're averting more hospitalizations. We're allowing people to get tested sooner.
Time will tell if it allows people to move about more safely and with greater confidence. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, and we continue with VOA Asia. Messages are pouring in from leaders around the world after President Donald Trump announced early Friday that he and his wife had tested positive for the coronavirus. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
World leaders are reaching out to President Donald Trump after he said he and his wife have contracted the coronavirus. The head of the World Health Organization wished the couple a speedy recovery.
Overnight, we heard that the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump, and First Lady Melania Trump tested positive for COVID-19. I want to start today by wishing them both a full and swift recovery. Our prayers are with them.
Addressing the media at the end of the two-day European Union summit, where leaders discussed the virus and its impact on the economy, German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
I would like to use this opportunity to wish U.S. President Donald Trump and his wife Melania a very full and speedy recovery as quickly as possible from their COVID-19 infection.
Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador did the same.
I take this opportunity to wish the President of the United States and his wife a quick recovery.
The Kremlin released a statement saying Russian President Vladimir Putin sent a telegram to the White House. In the statement, Putin writes in Russian, "I am sure that your inherent vitality, good spirits, and optimism will help you cope with the dangerous virus." In Nigeria, many newspapers reported Trump's coronavirus infection on their front pages. Abiodun Ayinde, an accountant and tax expert in Lagos.
All of us have to be careful. No one is immune. American president is contacted. So we have to be careful. Stay safe. Use face mask.
A White House official said Friday the president was experiencing mild symptoms. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This is VOA Asia Weekend. U.S. lawmakers have been meeting with President Donald Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who would fill the seat left empty by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. If confirmed as expected, Barrett will have a critical impact on court decisions on a range of issues impacting life in the United States, from abortion to health care to this November's presidential election. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports.
The historic confirmation battle over U.S. federal judge Amy Coney Barrett kicked off on Capitol Hill this week as Senate Republicans met and praised the mother of seven nominated by President Donald Trump late last month.
President Trump has nominated exactly the kind of outstanding person whom the American people deserve to have on their highest court.
The death of liberal Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg left the U.S. Supreme Court with only eight justices just weeks before Election Day. Republicans argue that without Barrett on the court, there is a risk that an evenly split court would be unable to decide any conflict over the presidential election.
It would create a constitutional crisis. That's part of the reason the Senate needs to act and act swiftly, so that we have nine justices that can resolve any issue.
But Democrats say that is the very reason Barrett should not be confirmed.
Democrats are pressing her to recuse herself should she be seated, given that she was appointed by someone that will ultimately be on the ballot, who she might decide to either to keep in power or to decide to remove him from power.
If seated, Barrett would also immediately hear a key case deciding the legality of the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, the program expanding access to health insurance passed during the Obama administration.
This is not a joke to the 20 million Americans who could lose their health insurance if the ACA is struck down. Not a joke to the parent of a child who has cancer, who would have to watch helpless as their child suffers if protections for pre-existing conditions are struck down.
Republicans argue the ACA overreaches and their not-yet-released plan would cover pre-existing conditions. The 48-year-old Barrett could serve for decades on the court, making key decisions that will impact the lives of young voters like Sean Yetter.
I'm not a huge fan of Barrett. She, some of her opinions on like health care, on like access to health care and specific rights, I think, are counterintuitive. I think it's a step backwards from progress Ruth Bader Ginsburg had made.
But Barrett's confirmation would be seen as a win for many anti-abortion conservatives who have praised Trump's court nominations.
You're seeing policies that are being passed right now that are supporting the pro-life movement, and they're supporting women.
Democratic voters are concerned the devoutly Catholic judge will overturn decisions on abortion and gay marriage.
I don't necessarily want someone's own personal religious views affecting the decision for everyone.
Judge Barrett has said her faith does not influence her judicial decisions, a concern congressional Democrats expressed at her 2017 confirmation hearing for a federal judgeship.
The dogma lives loudly within you, and that's of concern.
Republicans say such concerns violate a key American value.
Her religion and how she practices her religion ought not to be a disqualifier, because we appreciate freedom of religion.
Barrett's confirmation hearings get underway on October 12th, and the Senate could hold a full floor vote on her nomination as early as October 26th. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
You're listening to VOA Asia Weekend. Jimmy Carter has become the first former U.S. president to reach the age of 96. His birthday was October 1st. But during the last year, Carter has suffered a series of health setbacks. As he turns 96, VOA's Kane Faribault reports there are several new films and a book that put the Georgia peanut farmer in the spotlight as the pandemic keeps him out of the public eye.
When he spoke to VOA last September, ahead of his 95th birthday, former President Jimmy Carter, who survived a battle with cancer in 2015, hinted that his age was catching up to him.
I fell down a few months ago and broke my left hip, so I'm having to learn how to walk again, and so my actual movements are restrained a little bit.
Several days after the interview, Carter fell again at his home in Plains, Georgia. An injury visible in Nashville, Tennessee, during his annual Habitat for Humanity home building project with his wife, Rosalind.
Yesterday, I fell down and hurt my forehead and got a black eye, but I'm doing well. I feel good enough to build houses.
Further examination revealed Carter's injury created a buildup of blood on his brain, requiring surgery, followed by a long recovery.
He had to struggle to recover his speech and his mobility.
Author Jonathan Alter says his recent health setbacks and now restrictions amid the pandemic have impacted Carter's once busy schedule.
COVID is frustrating for him. He doesn't like church on Zoom. He likes to go to Maranatha. He hasn't been able to teach Sunday school class, which was very important to him.
Alter, who interviewed Carter numerous times since 2015 while writing his new biography of the former president, titled His Very Best, says the Carters are still engaged in the work of their global nonprofit Carter Center and are closely watching the 2020 election campaign.
The only time Jimmy Carter is really unhappy is when he's not busy. So I thought it was very interesting that he met with Pete Buttigieg, Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar when they made the pilgrimage to Plains earlier this year. And even now, like maybe as we speak, he is working the phones, talking to donors.
Jimmy and Rosalind Carter also recorded audio for a video segment during the Democratic National Convention in July, supporting nominee Joe Biden, who, as a senator from Delaware in 1976, was among the first in Congress to support Carter's successful run for the White House.
There's a lot of comparisons between the Carter campaign in 1976, even though he was obscure and outsider and Biden is an insider, a lot of differences between them. But where they are quite similar is that Carter was running right after Watergate, and he talked about healing, which is something that Joe Biden talks about now. They have a similar kind of moderate Democrat approach to governing.
That approach is explored in several upcoming films, including Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President, which explores Carter's outsider campaign for the White House.
I was very determined to get the hostages released.
And Desert One, a documentary that delves into Carter's fateful decision in 1980 to authorize a military rescue of American hostages in Iran, an event that contributed to his 1980 election loss to Republican Ronald Reagan.
Carter was always honest, always intelligent, always studying issues and was on top of the question.
Former Vice President Walter Mondale worked alongside Carter during their 1977 to 1981 White House term to normalize relations with China and negotiate the Camp David peace accords between Egypt and Israel, among other initiatives. He continues to look to Carter, who was only 3 years older, for guidance on living a long life.
I'm going to find out and take some of that stuff. This is amazing. At his age, he's strong, wants to be a part of things. He's studying all the issues, yet he's still a main contender in the issues of our country.
Issues including a new role for the Carter Center, which plans to focus on the upcoming U.S. election in November, a first for the organization, well known around the world for monitoring over 100 troubled elections. Kane Faerbaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, Italian scientists have shown evidence of Martian salt water, raising hopes of finding tiny Martian life swimming in it. NASA says an air leak aboard the International Space Station does not threaten the crew, and SpaceX's next batch of Starlink satellites will need to find another ride into orbit. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the week in space.
At Cape Canaveral in Florida, SpaceX Thursday canceled its launch of the next batch of Starlink satellites. This video from August shows a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket carrying 57 satellites to space. The company says its manufactured constellation will provide internet service to underserved parts of the world. But astronomers warn they will not be able to study the sky beyond the Starlink network. SpaceX blamed Thursday's cancellation on a sensor reading. Also this week, flight controllers woke up the crew aboard the International Space Station, or ISS, to hunt down an air leak. ISS Deputy Manager Kenny Todd.
We went through a several-hour activity, and we think we got, again, some more data. We got a finer point on where we think the leak is, and we have a leak detector on board, and now we'll start to really put some focus in the service module and try to work with our Russian colleagues to get that taken care of.
NASA says the leak poses no threat to ISS crew. In other news, an underground lake beneath the South Pole on Mars may indicate a network of salty ponds. Italian scientists say this raises the prospect of the existence of microbial Martian life swimming in those waters. The Italian Space Agency's Angela Olivieri.
We are more than satisfied. With this new discovery, it becomes a milestone regarding our understanding of Mars. The Mars's radar can penetrate the subsurface, and for this research, those images obtained are for the most part radiograms.
Scientists based their findings on more than 100 radar observations by the Mars Express mission from 2010 to 2019. The surface temperature at Mars's south pole is minus 113 degrees Celsius but gets warmer below the surface. Researchers suggest future Mars missions target the region. Finally this week, NASA released this promotional video touting the October 31st NASA SpaceX Crew-1 mission bound for the ISS. It will be the first crew rotation mission with four astronauts flying aboard a commercial spacecraft and the first involving an international partner. Soichi Noguchi from Japan's JAXA Space Agency will be on board the flight. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Mysterious creatures like Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster are more than just fun, scary stories that we tell ourselves. Myths and superstitions that are passed down through the generations can provide insight into a culture's perspective. As VOA's Dora McCarr reports, they can also function as a warning.
No one knows if Mothman is real, but his legend certainly is in the state of West Virginia.
The Mothman story started here in Point Pleasant in November 1966. On the 15th of November, you had two young couples riding around the outskirts of town at night about 11 o'clock. And they came across what they thought was just a large bird. It chased them in their car, chased them back into the city limits.
More sightings of a giant bird-like creature followed.
Most people that saw it described this as about 6 to 7 foot tall, grayish in color, large wingspan, 10 to 12 feet, and it had two distinct red eyes, about the size of baseballs. Nobody ever reported anybody being attacked or harmed or anything.
Experts say creatures like Mothman are part of American folklore that reveal something about our fears and anxieties, and our understanding that there are mysteries in the world that are beyond normal comprehension.
The idea that there are non-human creatures that inhabit the earth and communicate and interact with humans is as old as human storytelling itself. Today we talk about UFO abductions, but in ancient Ireland and up until the early 20th century, there were stories of people who were abducted by fairies. It's the same thing with mythical creatures like the Mothman or Bigfoot, that there might be creatures out there who inhabit the earth and share the same landscapes, but don't necessarily interact with us or even are known to us.
Stories like Mothman can help explain the relationship between people and their communities. Many people believe Mothman served as a signal of impending danger. In this case, to warn locals of a bridge collapse that ended up killing 46 people.
The Mothman is more of a representation of the fact that people don't necessarily feel like people in charge, like their politicians or the people who are running factories and mines, can be trusted. So they need the help of this magical creature to warn them and protect them.
Mythical creatures might not be real, but the impact they can have on the local economy is. Once Point Pleasant fully embraced the Mothman legend, visitors and their dollars poured in.
Well, our town was empty, basically. We had very few stores. And the movie Mothman Prophecies came out. And I said to myself, we need a Mothman. So I knew a guy, took him about a year, and he made the Mothman. This town is busy every day because of the Mothman. He's done his job for Point Pleasant. He's really put us on the map.
Mothman and other mysterious creatures are how Americans learn their culture. and the stories we tell ourselves about the world. And, according to the experts, they are not necessarily fake. Dora McQuar, Point Pleasant, West Virginia, VOA News.
This has been VOA Asia Weekend, a compilation of some of the stories presented throughout the past week on our daily VOA Asia program. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Check out VOA Asia online at voanews.com.